Yeah, so I know that we're here today to talk about civility, and you know, I always turn to my ancient texts. You know, I'm like, what do the ancients have to say? Like, let's refer to their wisdom. So I found this this poem, which I thought was really beautiful, and I think it's really going to set the stage. And the opening line is, "Pede cabo ego vos et iramebo," which roughly translated means, "I will sodomize and face you." And it is in the collected poems of Mr. Gaius Valerius Catullus, you know, circa 84 BC to 54 BC. And, you know, the ancients were like, hey, man, like, the poet is the one that has to be, like, civil, all right? Like, don't censor his stuff, okay? Like, let him say whatever he wants. And he said, I will sodomize and face you. So, I mean, the ancients have spoken, all right? So, civility, not a requirement. We can end the show here, all right? What do you think, gentlemen?
Is that real?
That's very real. That is a very real poem that, like, they found and they didn't translate it for a long time. And they were like, we can't let people know that people in, like, 84 BC were like, hey, I wrote you this poem. Let me read it to you. I will sodomize and face you. And someone went, aw.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ian. You're right. That was a delightful introduction.
Is that a poem or something? Or
I think
a
in Latin it rhymes. I don't know. You know, it sounds
like a threat.
You know, sometimes there's a little terror in love, you know?
Yeah, so. Love was different back then, all right? Like, stop trying to, you know, measure love by our rigid modern standards, okay?
All right, well, on behalf of everyone, I'm excited to announce that this segment is officially over and we are now ready to start the show!
Welcome to Camp Reeducation, an immersive boot camp into the world we thought we knew. We are your hosts, Ian and Shay, here again with another amazing sleepover with a guest of ours who has, you know, there's a lot of talking from me. Shay, why don't you go ahead and introduce the guest?
We're fortunate enough today to be joined by the amazing Drew, no last name. Be happy for once. Drew, what the hell's your last name?
Rosenthal.
Oh, right.
The most Jewish last name you could think of.
I love it. So, Drew, why don't you just introduce yourself and tell everyone what you do?
What do I do? What was the first thing?
Introduce yourself. Yeah.
I'm Drew Rosenthal. I am a video creator of sorts. The handle I go by, like, with all my work is Be Happy For Once. And what do I do? I don't even know what I do anymore. I make content and see if, people like it. And if people like it, I keep making it. If people don't like it, eventually I give up. Hopefully. And I've been working on this web series, Crackhead Barney and Friends, which is kind of like a new journalism show, kind of like similar to All Gas, No Breaks, if you guys have heard of that, but more with a blend of performance art and, you know, other experimental comedy stuff. But been making that show for like a few months now, and looks like people like it, so I keep making it.
Well, it's definitely getting pretty popular. I think when we checked earlier today, it had 27,000 likes or followers on Instagram.
Yeah. And then on TikTok, the number is like 43,000, right? Like,
yep, that's exactly right.
We did our homework.
We came prepared. We're done. Yeah, so that's crazy. It's funny because I never, ever, after seeing Crackhead Barney, would ever think new journalism. and maybe this is just a term I'm unfamiliar with, but can you walk me through what that means?
New journalism. Yeah, so I think it's like, I'm pretty sure that's a real term. So it's like almost like new journalism's like I think it's almost synonymous with comedy journalism a lot, or it's just kind of experimental journalism. Especially like combining comedy with journalism, or you know, kind of towing the line between like what is okay in journalism and in, you know, what's okay in like art. I like think of like my dad's generation. I feel like his new journalism was Howard Stern. I think that's kind of like a good example. Like somebody who was like, you know what, I'm not gonna do it the same way as other people. I'm gonna cut through the bullshit, you know, and I'm gonna like I'm just gonna ask like questions that people don't normally think are appropriate. Or in a way that people don't normally think is like normal or appropriate for like what people think like journalism should be.
I feel like Stern is like a really good example of like a cultural bookmark, kind of like a moment in an era. So I like that you kind of gave us that example to work with. So I mean, like, what do you think like crackhead Barney is then? I guess in that same vein, like if Howard Stern is, you know, to the like shock jock is to the 90s or whatever, like what is crackhead Barney to the poster era, or like the Instagram TikTok era?
What is, oh wow, that's a difficult one.
I mean, no, don't worry about it. Take as much time as you need to answer. We can always edit it to make you sound like you answer right away. I mean, we wouldn't do the opposite. It's not like we would edit it to make you sound dumber.
Yeah. You know, wait, so what's the question? Yeah, I think it's, you know, she's just her own thing. You know, I think what we're doing with the show, like, as far as I see it, I don't think there's anything that like we're copying necessarily. Of course we have influences, but I think it's just, you know, it has to just stand for itself and its own uniqueness. I don't think I've seen like people, you know, combine like a talk show kind of journalism thing, like a man on the street kind of show with performance art the way that we're doing it. So I don't know. I think history is being told. I don't know. Other people will have to give it, you know, a name, the names and descriptors, because it doesn't have them yet.
Well, I can give a couple, because I'm looking at the Instagram right now, and you know, I'd say it's pretty intense. Like, so to anyone who has never seen Crackhead Barney before, Crackhead Barney, I guess she's a performance artist. Is that how she identifies?
Yeah, she's a performance artist.
Okay. So, and she goes around, and I guess like what you guys do with Crackhead Barney and Friends is you just go and interview people who like do not want to talk to her. Is that like,
that's an interesting take. I would say, yeah, I mean, we interview people with, who are on like some sort of polar end of the political, you know, spectrum. I think it's like juxtaposing her with like, you know, a MAGA person is pretty, you know, jarring.
Mm-hmm.
And like it creates a sort of spectacle, because you know you have someone who's like largely to the left, a black woman, running up on people who are essentially a part of white supremacist groups a lot of the time, as an example, and like just putting a mic in their face and trying to get something out of them.
Yeah,
you know what I really like about, I'm glad you brought up like the spectacle, because like that's something that I kept thinking about when thinking about Crackhead Barney, but it's, yeah, and I just want to like go on record really quick and say, like, I never thought that I would just be like this nonchalantly throwing out the word like crackhead when describing like a black performance artist. Like, oh, there's God. Something in that that makes me like a little like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But I know, like, it's interesting because, like you said, like she runs up to them like with a microphone. It's almost like she, like this, you know, character that she's putting forth is almost like the personification of like everything these people are afraid of. And they're like, oh, fuck, it's real.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just like it's something that you'd normally, I mean, a lot of people fear for her life. I think that's an interesting reaction.
I fear for her life. Yeah. I mean, even just looking at the images of like her with like Proud Boys, like,
yeah,
with like, in like on the ground, like beneath, like they're not pointing the gun at her, but she's in the way of the gun. Just
she
like
put herself in the way
she
of the
put
gun.
Herself.
Yeah.
In the way
crazy.
Of the,
yeah. She
yeah. I was like, that's, I mean, I would never do that, especially like a guy who like probably isn't my friend.
I think that she is a genius at trolling people and trolling situations, and never ceases to deliver on those types of things. From what I see, it's like, you know, the way I edit it and what I decide to show is like, you know, I of course show like a lot of shocking things, like her under a gun of a boogaloo boy, mm-hmm. you know, and stuff like that. But, you know, I think she is actually surprisingly careful about what she does and kind of picks her battles really carefully. And like, she backs out of situations when she does feel like it's, you know, getting uneasy or like somebody is like, you know, physically threatening, you know?
Right.
But I would say like, surprisingly from what I've seen, it's like a lot of like, you know, these MAGA people, even like, people from like some white supremacist groups, like the Proud Boys, they're kind of overwhelmed by it, you know, and they're not really, I don't think they're in any position to be physically threatening, in at least the settings and the ways that we're like approaching them. It's definitely a feel. I wouldn't say that this is a written art form where we have a book where we wrote down like what is okay to do and what's safe to do and not safe to do. And we were definitely feeling it out, and it's definitely dangerous. But I would say you have to be there.
It's the spectacle encountering the spectacle, which I think is like an important interaction to bring to a head. But I'm curious to know, like, there's like my impression, but like, I want to know personally, like, what is like your goal with like with Crackhead Barney, and like, what are your hopes and like aspirations with it, I guess?
I would say like the biggest goal of the project is to get a show, to get like funding to make the show and to be on a platform that, you know, will give people, you know, make the show more visible to people. Mm. So like, let's say like a TV network wanted to hit us up and be like, hey, like, we want to meet with you. We want to talk about funding you and putting you on our network. Yeah, that's the goal for our, that's like the big goal for our show.
Well, it's funny because you guys already have like somewhat of a platform. I mean, you built the platform for yourself. I mean, using, you know, social media or whatever. I mean, it seems like you put out a video, you're automatically getting, you know, dozens of thousands of views.
Yeah. And I think the trajectory is to continue building that platform and continue getting more viewers and showing that we have a good proof of concept. Mm. You know, and then hopefully, you know, we could live off of it. You know, we want to, everybody has to live, everybody has to survive. I know we're all kind of scraping by one way or another right now, but at some point we all have to get a job or continue the show. Yeah. So I think, you know, a good goal was, you know, make a living off of it. We're not necessarily trying to get rich, but, be nice to continue and live off our art, like many people's, like many artists' dreams are to live off of their art.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask too. So it's like, beyond like the goal, I guess, what do you want to say with like Crackhead Barney? Like, what are you trying to say with Crackhead Barney?
I don't think we're trying to say any one thing. I think it depends on the episode. I think each episode, more or less has a thesis, and if it doesn't have a thesis, maybe there's a thesis to draw upon the spectacle. We like did a couple episodes where we chased down Wall Street guys leaving the New York Stock Exchange and asking them like a ridiculous question. Where's the money?
Yeah. Where's the money?
We're at, like, she's out there like asking them for reparations.
Oh my yeah, God.
It's not, you know what I mean? Like it's not a question that's supposed to generate any real, like, you know, response or resolution. You know, it's meant to create a spectacle and make a point.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm just curious then, why do you think it got so popular? Like, what about that, like, almost like hyper confrontational approach to like performance art? Why do you think that got so popular?
I don't know. I mean, do you think there's other performance artists that are confrontational, like, that you could think of besides, besides
Barney? I can't name a single performance artist. I'm thinking off the top of
like Eric Andre. It gets like a little bit like that, you know?
Yeah. Eric Andre is up there. Cause he definitely does, like, that's a part of his prank show element. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's interesting cause, that comedy tradition goes back a long way. I mean, like I grew up watching Tom Green.
Right.
Oh, God, right.
And he also, you know, would prank people on the street and mess with people. He was less, I would say he was less confrontational than Eric Andre. And then I would say Barney is even more like, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. It's, you know, it depends on what they decide to show you or not, but I would say, you know, this, at least the stuff we decide to show Barney is more confrontational and, you know, more, boundary crossing than what I see from Eric Andre, but it's also political.
Right.
But yeah, Tom Green, I mean, you go back and look at his pranks and it's all about, you know, playing around with these other people's boundaries and, you know, messing with people and pranking them. I remember he did a whole thing where he would plank. He would do a thing called planking where he would basically just be like on the ground, Superman style, like basically dead. Like people would think he's dead and they would walk up and just like look at him and like poke him, be like, is this guy dead? And like he would do that for like 20 minutes and then just randomly get up like nothing happened and walk away.
Well, the political thing that you bring up about Crackhead Barney is super fascinating. And I wonder, like in the era of Trump, Crackhead Barney felt like it was a like very much counterculture. But now that we have a Biden presidency, like, do you see the role of Crackhead Barney changing?
No, not at all. I think a lot of the audience, a lot of the Crackhead Barney and Friends audience are leftists, and people who, you know, have lost, you know, faith in the political elite. That goes with Biden too. Biden, you know, is seen by many of our audience as being almost of a centrist Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like somebody who upholds the status quo, somebody that upholds a patriarchy, white supremacy. I'm speaking for these, our followers, but I'm sure that this is like somewhat of a consensus you know, I don't think someone like Biden deserves the respect of Kraken Barney and friends either.
I imagine that like a lot of people being drawn to Kraken Barney initially were like, yeah, you know, Cheeto Man bad, and like being confused as to why like Kraken Barney carries on. Like, I don't understand. Like, why is she still doing this? Biden's president. Things are better now.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've seen one comment, though. On either TikTok, like we're on TikTok and Instagram. That's where we are on. And a lot of people make a lot of comments and we get a lot of DMs. I don't think anybody's questioned why we are continuing doing what we're doing.
Yeah. I'm just, and again, like it's me just kind of like wondering because I feel like, you know, like, and I'm thinking specifically of like blue MAGA people, you know, like the vote blue, no matter who people mm-hmm. who are just like confused as to why they're still like discontent with Biden. They're like, I don't get it. Like we won. What are you still complaining about? And it's just like you had said, like nothing changes with Biden. Like Biden is there to reinforce the status quo.
Exactly.
Which I think leads nicely into like the next segment and like why we're kind of here in general, which is like civility in politics. And like, you know, we keep seeing stuff pop up. And like now that Biden's president again, I feel like there's just like this call amongst, I don't know, like normies, status quoers, to just kind of be like, all right, you guys, like let's work on unity and not division. Mm. Like it's now is the time for healing. And I feel like there's like this call for civility. I guess like the big question here is like, why are we talking about this? And I think like the main thing is, you know, people won't shut the fuck up about it. Like there's just like this yearning to go back to, I don't know, like, I guess like sleepwalking through, our political process. And I think maybe you kind of answered this question already, but I mean, like, would you, yeah, I guess you consider it to be like performance art, but like, would you consider it to be like quote unquote uncivil, like situationist, confrontational, absurdist, or do you think all these things are like distinctions without a difference?
I think it's hard to tease apart. You know, I would say like all these things kind of exist within the performance art, you know what I mean? Like being confrontational, like the style, the approach, the rules and boundaries that are like in place when these performances happen, you know, are all a part of the performance art and all speak to it. And the, you know, the ways that we treat people, the ways that we respond to people in any particular episode and, you know, their political leanings or their political identities matter too.
Do you think it's important to talk about civility in politics, or do you think it's one of these like questions that's trying to like just distract from the issues? And it's just like, why are you guys so upset? Like, let's work on being civil as opposed to like, boy, there's a lot to be upset about.
I think it's a great conversation because I think it's a question about like who deserves our respect, like who deserves like a person's respect. Have like certain communities and races in our country been historically respected?
Yeah.
Right. So I think there's a lot of good questions there. And I think it's about being content with a situation. Mm. And then also just kind of acknowledging like how do you create social change? Do you do it by being civil, or do you do it by breaking a window or putting a mic in someone's face?
Yeah.
Mm.
It's funny because I'm very anti-respect, I think respect is like an outdated hierarchical patriarchal concept, and I think it needs to be replaced with the concept of appreciation. Like it's no longer like, all right, wow, you became successful, you didn't do anything good for me, but I respect how many people you stabbed in the back to get in your position. No, it's like, can I appreciate you? Like, are you doing something maybe more of like a utopian idea? Like, are you doing anything to like benefit the greater good, or is your cause ultimately, you know, morally sound and beneficial? And I think that's kind of a shift we need to see, like away from this idea of like, you need to respect me. And it's like, no, like, can we appreciate what you're doing? Like, are you doing something good?
That's interesting about like respect maybe being outdated or something. The way I've always looked at respect is that it comes from within. You know what I mean? It's not like it doesn't come from authority. You know, me personally, I don't think we should respect the police, for instance, just because they're technically an authority. You know, if people haven't gotten respect from them, then why should the respect go the other way? Mm. You know, it's a two-way road.
The point of our show, generally speaking, of Camp Reeducation is to challenge our biases and preconceptions. And like this is actually like the question of civility, especially talking with Ian about it. Like Ian has like some really different opinions. I think you and Ian might actually be a little bit more aligned than Ian and I are. But like, I think I came into this conversation agreeing with like, yeah, let's all just get along, you know? And I think the more I'm like having this conversation, I'm actually realizing that I think that is kind of bullshit. Like, yeah, like I have it pretty fucking good. That's why I want to keep it this way. Like my life is is nice. Like, yeah, don't fuck with what I got. You know, and I realize like that's absolutely a privileged perspective. But in line with challenging our biases and preconceptions, like I want to like just like on the record right now, before we dive any further into this conversation, like do we like point blank, do we need civility in politics?
I don't even know if that's the right question to ask.
Mm. What do you think is a better question?
I think it's just who deserves civility.
Oh.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm hung up on this idea of like respect or something. But I think it's very much like about like who could we be rude to make a point? Like who is it okay to be rude to, for instance, to make a point?
And I guess like who is that then? Like who is the person that you're like, all right, I can shit on you? Is it people in power or people who like stomp on other people's power or rights?
I think so. I think it's people, you know, who have power and assume that they should have authority over you when they never earned that respect to begin with.
Ian, how about you? You didn't answer the civility question, Ian. Who
you know,
do you think?
You know, I think before hearing Drew's answer, I was going to say no, but now I'm like, fuck. Because, you know, it's, yeah, I don't know. I feel like the people who are demanding civility in politics are the people in power. So it's like, I don't feel like I hear those requests coming from the bottom. Because they're like, we don't want civility. We want fucking help. We want assistance. We want resources, you know, like, you know, you can be nice to me all you want, but if your policies are harmful, like, you know, civility doesn't mean shit. So I think civility is kind of like almost a euphemism for bullshit, you know? And it's
You and I kind of talked about this before too, like even just maybe the idea of like civility as an umbrella term under which other more precise terms can fit. So like we say like civility and it's like, I'm sure like during the Black Lives Matter protests, like, and no one would ever say it in these words, I think, but like, yes, like we want police to treat all of our communities civilly instead of murdering us. But like, it's an imprecise term because really it's like, we want nonviolence from police. You know, we want like to, and I mean, at the bare minimum, we want nonviolence from police. And at most, we want, you know, respect or, you know, I don't know, equal and fair treatment and a lot of other things. But I wonder if like civility there, if it's just too broad of a term to make sense in these contexts.
I mean, it needs to be defined too, right? Because there, like I was thinking about this, there are politics to civility,
yeah,
right? The same way there are politics to the government. I mean, politics is like a general word to define politics. It just means rules, right? Mm, and right. So there's politics to like the weather. Right. There's politics that dictate the weather. Right. And I think the politics of civility are different from governmental politics. And I think the politics of civility are largely defined by the ruling class.
Yeah. I think civility is to agree with your last point. I think it's like the codified language of the ruling class. Like civility is the euphemisms that justify police violence. It's like, you know, oh, we're keeping right. the peace. It's like, no, you're fucking tear gassing people. You know, like we're maintaining the world order. No, like you're invading oil rich countries and fucking murking them. Like, so I think that civility is kind of like a very like insidious term that gets slipped in when it's basically trying to say like, no, maintain the status quo. Like this is what we want when we say we want civility. We want politeness, but we don't want anything to change.
Exactly. Right. It's kind of just like white people rules.
Yeah, I think it is. So like, all right, Drew, I got a couple pop quiz questions for you here, or at least one fun one. Is it okay to laugh at Rush Limbaugh dying?
Oh, wow. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah. I say, yeah, I'm definitely pro laugh at Rush Limbaugh's death. Pro.
I think everybody, a lot of people are agreeing right now that he did more bad for the world than good. Let's all laugh about it and celebrate.
So, all right. What about, before we found the results of Trump's impeachment, was it okay? I actually, you know, like it's funny because like I don't even want to ask the question because I feel like the answer is just hell yeah, like Trump getting impeached a second time, like that's fucking hilarious. Like ultimately, like I guess politically kind of stupid and futile as we saw, but like, I don't know. At least it happened. At least he goes down as like the only president to be impeached twice. Yeah, that's a fucking interesting question, and I guess it's interesting because like you mentioned earlier, Drew, like this isn't like. The question of civility, like, isn't new. Like, I feel like this goes back, you know, from before the founding of the United States. Like, we talk about like civility in terms of like, I mean, even revolutionary civility, like the Boston Tea Party. Like, I've seen so many fucking hilarious memes about like, you know, the the British elites talking about the thugs throwing all the tea into the harbor. It's like, oh, those thugs, until they learn how to protest nonviolently, they'll never make anything out of themselves, or something like that. And obviously, like, the British Tea Party, or like the Boston Tea Party, was like one of our like cornerstone acts of civil of incivility, you know, and that's like a defining feature of us. But yet somehow there's like this still, I guess it's a classist racist issue that like presents itself. So I don't know, do you have any idea why now we seem so eager to act like it's unique to our area? Like, did we just forget?
That's okay. Like, why is this like coming up now as a issue? Yeah.
Why do we pretend like it's like, oh, why are we so incivil? It's like, it feels like it's caked into our very nature as Americans.
I do feel like, you know, it's hard to say. Like, I'm trying to figure it out too. Like, I don't even know what happened in the 80s. Like, what happened in the 80s? I wasn't there really. But it seemed like a lot of people were strangely complacent. I mean, there were civil rights movements and stuff going on too, but I don't know, maybe it's the age of social media. Maybe it's the way the political discourse has moved. Maybe it's because there's more, more people are radicalized in both in different directions today. I actually don't know the answer to that question, but for whatever reason, people are like talking about like, who we should respect, like who should we, like when it's okay to be polite, when it's okay to break a window to make a point, right? Like, these discussions are coming up now more than ever. And I think that people are questioning, if being entirely peaceful and respectful and polite is a way of, is a tried and true way to enact like social change in any real big way.
Like the Rush Limbaugh thing seems easy. Like, it's easy to look at like the death of Rush Limbaugh and go like, fuck you. Good. You should have died sooner. But then like, I don't know, it feels like when you want to criticize people like Obama or people like Biden, all of a sudden people are, you know, they seem much less eager, to like allow that conversation to happen, when Obama and Biden are arguably worse than Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, like, Rush Limbaugh was a racist piece of shit, but he didn't bomb anybody. Like, he didn't blow up any regions. Like, he didn't write any laws that like disenfranchise and harm Americans. So like, why do you think it becomes, I don't know if there's necessarily like a question in there, but I mean, just like, do you have thoughts on that? Like, why it's so much more difficult to have these conversations about people that maybe do a lot more harm than good, but are civil on the outside?
Repeat the question.
I don't even know if it's like a fucking question, but it's just like, it was interesting to me because like, I made, after Rush Limbaugh died, I made like the laughing SpongeBob meme, and I was like, Rush Limbaugh dies, me, ha ha ha. But I feel like if, they came out and they were like, Joe Biden is like, Joe Biden's brain fell out of his fucking head today. And if I made like a meme about that, people would be like, this is in bad taste, sir. And it's like historically speaking, like, Joe Biden has done a lot of fucking awful things.
I think anybody who says like, oh, like making fun of Joe Biden is bad taste is probably just a fan of Joe Biden, or like thinks that he's like a more of a good person than a bad person in this world, or, you know, they don't really see him as upholding a status quo or like a white supremacy in any way. I think it just kind of reveals like where people's allegiances lie. Like whether or not you're like, oh, like, you know, that's so disrespectful to Joe Biden to make fun of the fact that he's clearly demented. It just depends on where you're coming from. You know, there's certain, like with Crackhead Barney and friends, there's certain people that we wouldn't disrespect or make fun of. It's not like we would go to a Black Lives Matter protest and start making fun of protesters and joking about the situation because it's about where our allegiances lie. Yeah. Like, we have respect for those people, and that respect comes from within, and it's mutual, right?
You know what? It's interesting because it seems like it, like, especially just touching on the Rush Limbaugh versus Joe Biden issue, it seems like Rush Limbaugh came from a place exclusively of hate. I think that that's like a much easier target for us, and we can see, we're just like, okay, this is like, you know, effectively like hate speech against like a lot of different marginalized communities. Whereas I think like Joe Biden, his intention is I think just largely to maintain a status quo and not in an attempt to further marginalize already marginalized people. But I think just because it's like, okay, this like works okay for me and for like people who look and act like me. So maybe I'll just keep it this way. So the violence that is like implicit with decisions like that Obama made and Biden made weren't from motives of hatred. They were like, I guess, like more selfish motives, which somehow feels less evil.
Well, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, Shay. So.
Yeah. I mean, they're not all rotten hell. Who cares?
But still. I don't think it's more or less evil. I think they're just different flavors.
Interesting.
I think it's like apples and oranges, or you know what I mean? But they're still rotten.
Yeah. I mean, like even just talking about Obama and Joe Biden, I mean, I feel like especially Joe Biden, this feels like centrism, you know, and it feels like when we talk about Joe Biden, we're basically talking about, you know, what, I don't know, what would have been a George Bush Republican or, you know. Is centrism just being apolitical now? Like, are you just trying to appease everyone? So basically doing nothing? And I guess like, is that deep down what Crackhead Barney is like attacking is just like this like apolitical attitude? Is that what, or apolitical, or I guess like hatred attitude? I don't know. You know, as I'm asking
this
question,
I think we're making a spectacle out of the a comedy spectacle out of the disrespect, right? It's like funny to disrespect Wall Street when they just rigged the stock market, right?
Right.
It feels I would call it a political catharsis. Like catharsis. People feel good watching it. It feels like some form of justice is happening, and it's entertainment at the same time. Mm. So I think that's why people eat it up, especially, you know, people who are angry and don't want to be complacent.
You know, Shay had never heard of the term like the dirtbag left. Mm. So like this was new to him, and he was like, oh, okay. And maybe he can kind of share your thoughts on it, because it was, I think more like, surprising to him than to me. So I think he's got maybe fresher perspectives, but like, are you familiar with this term? Like, mm-hmm. do you fuck with the dirtbag left? Like, what's your thoughts on that?
I used to, I listened to like Chapo Trap House, like up until like 2016. I'm not sure why I stopped. Yeah. I mean, I think it's like a messy thing too. And it's like, that's the dirtbag left also evokes like specific personalities I know on the left that maybe we all don't support, or it's not like I could group them all together as somebody I support or I fuck with. So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's some people, there's some journalists in the dirtbag left still that I think would be cool, but I haven't honestly paid too much attention to it. Another thing about the dirtbag left is that it's kind of an irony movement, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
They're like, the dirtbag left is full of irony bros. I wouldn't group Crackhead Barney and Friends under the genre of the dirtbag left entirely, because we're not out there just being ironic. You know, there's a point. It's not like meaningless irony. It's not like a Tim and Eric episode or something.
Well, what is the point then? Cause I like, it's funny, cause I feel like earlier you were like, yeah, there's not really like, we're not trying to say anything. But what I'm hearing, there is some message here behind this. And I guess maybe it's like what you were saying before, like just an attack on the concepts of respect.
I mean, I think I said this before, but you would have to talk about a specific episode. So we could bring up if you bring up a specific episode and be like, what was the point of that?
Does one easily come to mind that you could explain to us?
Yeah, easy. Like an NY Pig episode where the Christmas episode where he walks up to police officers on the street and asks them, little boy or little girl, what do you want for Christmas? He's just asking them what they want for Christmas.
What's the message there?
The message is we don't respect the cops.
Little boy.
So this is something that like I struggled with in terms of like the conversation you were mentioning earlier, like who deserves respect. And I think like my own personal hierarchy is like, you know, power deserves like our ire. And I mean, like that's comprised of like politicians, institutions, corporations. But then I think like organizations and maybe like, I don't know if, you know, careers, maybe like some sort of like jobs make it more like tricky, because I mean, like you're still addressing like an institution in a way, like, you know, the police is an institution, but it's like an institution comprised of individuals. And, like, I think the institution of policing in America is like, just, it's fucked. people attach interpersonality to it. Essentially, they're like, you know, this is Bob Rickshaw, and he fucking saw kids playing basketball and he bought them all sandwiches and he's a cop. Like, are all cops bad now, you fucking assholes?
Wait, so what's the question?
There's no question there. There was going to be one, and then I got lost in that fucking like story about
cops and sandwiches.
What's the correct way to criticize movements or institutions without like isolating people? Because I feel like that's like the big conversation, right?
Mm. Without isolating people, interesting.
Or maybe without alienating people, because it's weird. Like, if you
talking about the people in the movement, Ian. Like, you're talking about like individuals within the movement that you're criticizing.
By insulting like the movement, you essentially insult like the individuals within the movement. And I'm thinking of like the Blue Lives Matter people, right? Mm. Like, it's such a fucking. It's like the perfect example of the useful idiots. And in saying that, like, I feel like, you know, oh, that's uncivil. But I mean, no, like, it is. Like, they're like, no, we love our state-sanctioned violence. But then, like, then people feel like attacked if you're like, fuck Blue Lives Matter. And then, like, you know, you're at the dinner table, someone would be like, you know, Uncle Ricky is a cop. So it's like, how do you have any thoughts on how to criticize movements or organizations without like alienating people and, you know, getting them like having them stop listening to you before you have a chance to say something?
Or do you need to alienate people? And that's like kind of what I'm, when you say that, like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, maybe there's some, I mean, maybe that's what you need to fucking do. Like the tolerance paradox, a society can tolerate an infinite amount of anything except for intolerance. And that's like, so like, is what Crackhead Barney and friends is doing is just not tolerating intolerance.
We don't really have a concern about alienating people. Like, they're already kind of alienated. The show isn't, our intentions for like the art for the show isn't to open up a discourse with like a cop and have a conversation with them in any real way. Of course we want to hear from them, but they never talk. That's not like our intention is to basically like almost like make a meme that says like cops are bad. You know what I mean? So it's like they become a part of a collage of sorts, or like a message.
What do you want to hear the cops say?
I don't, like, I mean, honestly, like, anything's game.
Like, what's the best thing you can imagine?
What does Barney
want
to hear the cops say? That's another question.
That's interesting.
Barney wants, or even NY Pig would probably want the cops to like get angry and say something like that they regret.
Right. So you can
but it's also
them.
Like, that's a part of the art. I know like, Barney's whole game, and she's pretty good at it, is to like bait people into saying certain things to her. You know, bait people into saying racist things to her. It like, it makes a point. It's a really, I think it's really good art in a sense that like she's trying to get people to reveal their truth, you know, their true colors and everything. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I mean, my job as like a producer and editor, as like a director, is to just like kind of take what I get and turn it into something that's meaningful no matter what. So like, if the cops aren't responding, that says something too, right? It says that they're under this purview of like this organization, right? That oppresses them too. That makes all cops bad, right? Like, they're under orders, right? They yeah. work for the elite, right? So like, it also shows something else. So it's like, it's like working within our constraints and just kind of seeing what we get and what meaning can be like construed from it.
I'm just curious, have you experienced any violence? Have you or Barney or NY Pig or, you know, anyone that you're working
only
with?
Only like, from the Wall Street guys.
Really? What happened?
Yeah. Like one of them like took our mic. One of them like one of them was super pushy, like got very physical really quickly.
Whoa.
I saw that. Yeah.
It was interesting. Cause like we've talked to Proud Boys, Boogaloo Boys, like random, like, you know, MAGA nuts, you know, who believe
QAnon
in QAnon.
Yeah.
And honestly, I've never felt unsafe around them. It's very strange. I think it's also has to do with like the when and where and how kind of approach them. Like I saw the Proud Boys marching through the streets of DC, and screaming fuck Antifa and trying to get to Black Lives Matter Plaza to like beat up Black Lives Matter protesters. And that was a situation where we're like, no, we're not going to interview them right now.
Yeah.
seems like a good idea.
Yeah. This is a witch hunt that's going on right now. We're not going to reveal ourselves. But the Wall Street, I was surprised that the Wall Street guys were, were the most confrontational and the most aggressive up front.
Ain't no violence like institutional violence. That's crazy. I saw that video too. And like, I saw the one guy who grabbed your mic. He's like, what are you going to do now? And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, this yeah. is probably an accountant. What the fuck?
It's crazy. And I think it's because they're like, on some level, they know that what they're doing is wrong. You know what I mean? Like, and at some point they are kind of humiliated by the whole thing.
Interesting.
You know? And they don't want their image. They know that just having their image out there at all can be used against them. So I don't know. It is interesting that the Wall Street guys were the most confrontational and the most aggressive up front.
Never would have expected that, especially considering like the fear mongering that you see from like Proud Boys and neo-Nazis and, you know, the Boogaloo, you know, even the freaking QAnon people. Cause I know you were there on the day of the insurrection and you interviewed the QAnon shaman.
I actually was not there the day of the insurrection.
Oh no, but
we interviewed him a month beforehand. This is a very common misconception.
Oh wow. I had no idea.
So that the MAGA people, the Million MAGA March had been like a monthly event leading up to the insurrection.
No way.
So like all these people were descending upon DC every month.
Wow.
Yeah. So we saw him a month prior.
That's remarkable. Yeah. Wow. I mean, in terms of like just marketing, like, and
he was in the same outfit. I actually never intended to use that interview either, but the day that the insurrection happened, I mean, I remember Barney wanted me to go, but I like knew something was going to happen.
Dude, I messaged you. I was like, dude, we were talking about like Ian and I, we were in the middle of QAnon camp. We were like, dude, we should go. Like something's going to happen.
And I was like, no, I don't want to be a part of that.
I just didn't want to die. Like I was like, no, seriously. Like I was like, I knew that this was like their last stand.
Yeah.
And I felt it like they like the month that I was there, like the time I was there, we interviewed the QAnon shaman, all these other people, they were like pleasantly delusional.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, Trump's still going to win. We're going to stop the steal. And we got this, right?
Well, dude, we did a whole fucking camp on QAnon, and it's insane, like, the mental gymnastics those people went through to, like, keep up their weird, crippling worldview.
Well, it's weird. It's funny, too, because, I mean, like, yeah, like, to Shay's point real quick, like, there were posts of pictures of Trump from 2016 and 2020, and they were like, guys, this isn't Trump. This is someone in a Trump suit. Like,
oh,
look.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, dude, it was not okay. I was like, bro.
And that's like another thing. It's like, how could you not laugh at this shit?
Well, you know, it's
like, it's so like revealing the absurdity. Like, I think it like everything has gotten so hyper real and so absurd that like you like you turn on like any mainstream media, like CNN, and they're like talking about it. Like, it's like a serious thing. Like as if like we should all like, oh, okay. Like this isn't absurd.
Yeah.
It's absolutely absurd. We are living in an absurd reality. And like, I don't know. I think laughing at it at least like reveals the absurdity. It reveals like how like far things have gone and how far like, you know, MAGA has gone off the deep end, for instance. And I think it's important to like come back to that, you know, like realizing like this is absurd. Like, let's not treat this as normal.
Yeah, it was hard for like our first episode on QAnon. We're like, this is fucking insane. Like, this is remarkable. But then we ended up interviewing this guy who did a 9-episode like mini series on QAnon, the history of it. And but also like the effect it has on QAnon supporters and their families. And what's like really interesting is like it's basically a disease. It's a mimetic intellectual disease where you just start believing one thing and then like you have to, through like weird heuristics in like human psychology, you end up having to justify previous strange beliefs with even stranger beliefs. And then like at the end of it, it's like, yes, you it's hard not to make fun of them, but it's also not helpful in solving it, which is an interesting like issue. Because like I have people in my family who are conspiracy theorists, and like I'll get into it and I'll argue like the weird details that they claim are true, but it doesn't change anything. Like they're basically like sick.
Well, this is what I was mentioning earlier, like badly, poorly, is this idea of like it gets more complicated when you want to address like movements or whatever. Like if you want to criticize the movement, but then it's like, it's not like a movement isn't like institutional power where there's like a series of like checks and balances. And if like, you know, one player gets removed, there's another one like lined up in the pinball machine to you know, fill that place. So it's like, you know, this is what I think where the question of civility gets trickier, because like, I think on an individual level, it's important to have like civility, unless someone's going to be like, you know, just like threaten your life, then that's out the window. But I think in terms of like on an individual interpersonal level, then I guess like civility becomes important. You can engage with someone's ideas and be like, right, well, like, why do you think this? Like as a human being, from one human being to another. But then when you're addressing like a mass of people, all of a sudden it gets more complicated because like you're addressing the ideas, but it's comprised of a number of usually, what's the word I'm looking for? Vulnerable like peoples, which is why they formed a mass so they can have some sort of power. So it's like, I don't know. We read a bunch of different articles or whatever, and like each kind of seemingly more absurd than the last when like addressing this problem of civility. And there was this NPR series on civility. And one of the things they talked about was like civility in the social sphere, specifically referring, you know, to like social media. And like, I'm just curious as to like, what are your thoughts on the way that people talk about politics on these, like, in the social sphere, like on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, all this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any one way that politics are being talked about. I mean, like, Crackhead Barney and Friends is one way to talk about politics. Being on Twitter and being an activist is another way to talk about politics. I don't know. Social media is just super open. I don't think there's any rules about it. Like, any one kind of set of rules about it. Different public spheres have different rules though. Like, I think the internet is like wide open. I'm thinking of like an interesting example about respect in public spheres and in history, film history. Like, I remember when I was studying like early cinema, there were like, you know, there were like these theaters, these Nickelodeons were like racially segregated. So you had these like black Nickelodeons, like white Nickelodeons, and the rules of what was polite at those Nickelodeons was different. You know, at the white ones, you're supposed to be quiet, not talk, right? And listen to, you know, so everybody could hear the music and pay attention to what's going on so they could focus. But that was a rule made up by white people, right? At the black Nickelodeons, it was like more like a party. That was my understanding. This is when I was studying it. Mm. They would have like musicians, like people would be having conversations, people would dance, you know what I mean? So it was just different, a totally different way of existing within that public sphere and experiencing, you know, the cinema, the moving image, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not like one way was wrong or one way was right, but you know, we still have this politic today where, you're supposed to be quiet and not talk in the middle of a movie or something. But that's just a rule that was made up largely by white people. And, at the dawn of cinema, it was made up by white people, and it, you know, in different settings, you know, that rule wasn't necessarily like upheld as being like normal.
What do you think of like the pearl clutching that happens, when referring to the way that people just like talk to each other on Twitter when discussing politics? Like, this was like one of the big things on like the NPR series, which is like, I just thought it was kind of absurd. They're like, did you know that people are rude to each other on Twitter? We found two examples where someone told another person to shut the fuck up. We frankly were shocked.
What do I think? I don't know. I mean, I think, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think the internet's just like a free for all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like there's no rules. Like there's some people who make a career out of just like having internet drama.
Well, it's funny too. Like my wife came up with a funny term for it today. She called it the wet ass pussy paradox, where the internet, well, the internet like reward, like in order to even make a dent in the fucking, you know, the gaping maw that is the internet, like you need to be inflammatory. And then like the people who agree with you, there's just a series of like dogpiling, and the algorithm rewards it. Like the algorithm doesn't go, this is inflammatory. Mm-hmm. The algorithm goes, people are going fucking crazy for this. Let's push this to the forefront.
Right.
And it's just like this paradox where in order to even get any sort of voice, you need to say something inflammatory or, you know, absurd, and then like that becomes the anchor that gets tied around your neck. So like any decent, humane, or good points that you make after that, you know, there's like this eye roll accompaniment of like, oh, of course the wet ass pussy person would say that.
Well, it's interesting because I don't even think of that as like, I mean, I think that obviously predates Cardi B and wet ass pussy. Like I'm immediately just thinking of like Eminem and his big splash in like the late 90s for being incredibly controversial, and then anything and not to mention like bigoted and homophobic in a lot of ways. So like I don't know, I imagine that's something that like severely predates the modern social media culture. But I think there's something about social media that is, and especially Twitter, that it just creates more incivility then is useful or helpful? Like, I guess, like, in that same NPR series that you were referencing, like, they do compare, like, someone lobbing homophobic slurs to someone dropping an F-bomb. And they're like, oh, look, they both are in the wrong. Like, this guy said, sit the fuck down, the kids are talking. And the other guy called him, like, the F-word, you know, and he, to a gay man. You know, it's like, okay, those that's the same thing. It's like, well,
it's not.
Yeah, you're right. It's not the same thing, you know? And it's like, and I mean, Ian brought up a really great point when we were, like, working out these ideas a little bit. But, like, the even the concept of civility is... In at least in modern American politics seems to be just like, how can we like present ourselves as fair, like a journalist organization? Like, how do we say that we are fair when you have fucking Proud Boys and militias like going into cities and beating people up? It's like, well, clearly there has to be an other side to it. And it's like, yeah, it's the liberals dropping F-bombs on Twitter, you know, and like, that's the other side. That's bad too. So we can't have that. And I guess where I see Crackhead Barney filling in is that is like, at least this is my impression of it. It's Crackhead Barney serves to come in and say, this is all fucking bullshit and it's absurd. Like, fuck all of you. Like, fuck the police, whatever. And just like, it's the loudest F-bomb you can drop, like metaphorically speaking, to just like, fuck the system, so to speak. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's a very punk attitude. It's like, I could say and do whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And you guys could say whatever you want about it. Like, I mean, that's how I see like a lot of Twitter spats. It's like, you know, like, and the algorithm rewards it. Like you said, it's like somebody says something that's like, you know, some people may not agree is okay or disrespectful or something. And then somebody responds and then everybody gets to talk about it. And that's still a version of political discourse. I think it's like figuring out like, you know, where everybody stands and who's offending each other is like about kind of figuring out where people stand and like how you're going to move forward. Yeah, I mean, I think that Crackhead Barney and Friends is more is definitely there's like a punk attitude to it. It's like, you know, we could say whatever we want. We could walk up to whoever we want. You know, we're following the law. We're not assaulting anybody, you know. And as long as we aren't doing those things, as long as we're not like, you know, like assaulting anybody or trespassing into someone's house or like there's certain rules that we follow, but, you know, or I'm public and an exchange is like kind of a free for all, but it's kind of invited, at least most of the time
by the other side.
Yeah. I mean, at least most of the time, I would say the Wall Street episode was like a big exception to that. But, most of the time, especially when we're at like a MAGA rally or a MAGA event, these people like want to be heard.
That's interesting.
I can't speak for Barney, for instance. Like, she decides how to respond, you know, how she sees fit. And that's like her art and her attitude and kind of speaks to the way that she sees the world too. But usually, you know, she's speaking to people that are symbolically represent, you know, a group of people that don't respect her or like haven't done anything to earn respect from her. And I feel weird saying this because we're just three white dudes, you know, here.
Yeah.
But she is like a Black woman. And that does like kind of like she does have a certain way of experiencing the world, you know, being in America and being around these people who have these political affiliations that are, you know, arguably like offensive to her existence.
And that's one of the things that really was weird about like the civility conversation, because I feel like, you know, asking for civility is really asking for like compromise. And they're like, all right, we have these two, you know, observably, which is really just, you know, again, I feel like it's like a manufactured consent thing where it's like, you know, oh, we have the Proud Boys over here. And then over here we have, you know, leftists who like say, shut the fuck up on Twitter. We need to compromise to make everybody happy. So, I mean, like, do you think there's a middle ground between these two groups? Or do you think we do need to be like more... I think the term that they saw was like, oh, like, you know, incivility leads to totalization. And it's like, yeah, like I don't want to compromise with like the, you know, far right. Like there is no fucking middle ground with them. Like shoot them to the fucking moon.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just depends on what our intentions are. Our intentions aren't to like, to remove that isolation. Like these people are already isolated and we're already isolated from them. And, I think like we would argue that that's kind of on them. You know, if they want to be a Proud Boy, if someone wants to be a Proud Boy, like they could be a Proud Boy, but we're not, that's isolating themselves from like a leftist movement, like entirely, you know what I mean? Or from, you know, a Black person who is an activist in the Black Lives Matter movement or something. So the intention isn't to like bring them in and try to have a discourse and try to get them to see our ways. It's to create an entertainment show, a political catharsis for our audience. So it really, it's never existed as a platform to unisolate people, you know. I'm not sure what the right word unisolate
include
to combine them to get, I don't know the word.
Yeah.
But we get it.
Yeah. That's never been our intention. And as far as I see it, it's like they did that to themselves. It's not like we're doing that to them. I don't think we're isolating them any further than they already are. Some people might disagree with that, but I think like this is how it exists. Like this is, we're living in this absurd existence where these people, you know, decide to believe in the QAnon conspiracies or that Trump is a good president. They did that to themselves.
I don't know. I think people fall victim to like huge fucking corporate and political narratives, and they're like lied to. And a lot of times, like fucking Fox News, like, you know, like the old, you know, like the old grandma sitting in a rocking chair, like just being fed like a steady diet of lies by Fox News.
Who's responsible?
Rupert Murdoch.
You know, like, are we going to blame the media and not just the people?
I don't know, man. I mean, I guess that's the question, right? But like, I guess it's both. But like, it's our institutions who pump out these idiots that just like have no idea how to decipher false news from reality. And then, you know, they go about believing in QAnon. It's like, well, whose fault is it?
I will say that there have been, and I use my gut with this, but there have been some people that we've interviewed that I just feel bad for.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think one reason or not, I just felt like I just didn't want to use it. You know, I follow, there's no like right or wrong. No one's wrote this rule book for us. But I do agree with you. I think there are a lot of people who are essentially brainwashed by, you know, the right wing media and media that pushes conspiracy theories. And they believe and affiliate with certain groups because of that. And it becomes more and more extreme over time. I don't know. When you talk about who's responsible, I think that's a tough one. I think it's both. Yeah. You know, I think people need to take responsibility for their own actions, for their own beliefs. But you know, the root of the problem, I do agree, is also like the media and like the way like people get information and the people responsible for disseminating information.
Well, it's weird too. And like, this is, you know, I feel like the narrative is that like, oh, like this is where civility comes in handy because like, you know, we can quote unquote reach across the aisle, which worked out great in after, you know, like Obama's first term.
There's some subtle sarcasm from Ian there for anyone who wasn't picking up on it.
I think, you know, and it's funny too, because like there's this false narrative, I think, being sold that, you know, they're like, this is the only people that we can work with. It's like, there's everyone split evenly down the middle. So it's like, we have to meet in the middle so that we can accomplish anything politically, while conveniently ignoring the fact that like barely more or just less than half the eligible voting population even fucking votes. Mm-hmm. So this is why I kind of think like where incivility could be a positive tool, and that like, no, like keep, you know, like utilize the anger with these institutions and motivate non-voters to mobilize and do something.
Yeah.
So it's like, as opposed to being like, I don't know, guys, I really think we need to work with all these fucking Proud Boys. It's like, there's a huge group of people that don't believe like extreme right wing ideologies that are not motivated. How about we engage with them and not the people that are like, I think we should kill half of everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on whether there's room for compromise. And again, there's no rule book about that, but yeah, I mean, the left isn't going to compromise with the Proud Boys any time soon or ever.
Vice versa, probably, right?
Vice versa. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. I've talked about this with people, especially, you know, I hadn't really had much real exposure to the right, until I started the show. It's been like super interesting to go out there and talk to these people and actually interact with them in person. But I don't know how to unfuck the world. I really don't, because it truly seems fucked.
Uh-huh.
More than ever. And I do like feel bad for these people. They are human beings.
Yeah.
That have been, I would say, brainwashed. I mean, they would probably maybe say the same for me. But I don't know. That's what I'm saying, is like, they think I'm brainwashed. I think they're brainwashed. So how are we going to fix
this? What do you
this?
Do from there?
Yeah. It's funny because like this is why I like Crackhead Barney, because I think it's important to engage the spectacle with another spectacle, because I mean the spectacle exists to basically maintain a symbolic order when it's interacted with seriously, like in the realm of the imaginary, as like Lacan puts it. But it's like as soon as the spectacle encounters another spectacle, it's exposed as a spectacle, and it's like, oh, this is fucking ridiculous. Like this is all absurd.
Yeah, I think it's really like in that way, it's like almost like just throwing it back in people's faces. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I'm shooting like a documentarian. I shoot like a documentary filmmaker. So it's not like I'm showing people anything that like wasn't actually happening. I'm just deciding to put it together into like a format and a product where people can like experience it a certain way. Mm. But what they're seeing is reality, you know, and it's the absurdity stands on its own. It's not, I mean, Barney turns it up, but she's just kind of amplifying it. One interesting thing though too is that like, is our show isolating the right wing? I don't know what to say about that, because we actually have a lot of right wing fans.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah. And a lot of MAGA people actually think our show is hilarious, and I know they follow our page. That's another thing I don't know what to say about that is like, for whatever reason, I mean, maybe we should have had a MAGA person who's a fan of our show being interviewed today too, so they could speak on it. I do not have enough information to speak for them yet, but I know a lot of, we have a lot of right wing fans that think our show's funny too.
That's fascinating. I would never have guessed that in a million years.
And it's like, I choose, like sometimes they'll DM us. So be like, we're actually invited on a big right wing podcast. These people who like loved our show.
No way.
Wow.
And we didn't want to, engage with that, at least right now.
It's funny because, I mean, the same goes, I think, for Shay and I. Like, and it's not necessarily always political, but I mean, like, Jesus Christ, for our astrology camp, we were like, fuck astrology. Like, this is part of the great American snake oil tradition. Like, they're all grifters. And then we had an interview astrologist, and they were like, yo, what you said was really fucking mean. And like, having to see like the hurt on their faces, I was like, oh shit. Like, we really need to change the way that we engage with some of this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, for whatever reason, I mean, we've definitely gotten some angry people, but I feel like I would say they're the right angry. They're the people that we want to be angry. You know, they're the people that we're not going to compromise with. But surprisingly, we've had a lot of people who like have said like, you know, I'm MAGA and I think this is hilarious, or I'm a Christian and I think this is hilarious.
Well, yeah, man, it sounds like you clearly tapped into something super powerful and prominent right now in the American psyche. Our last thing before we go, we checked in at the beginning about our idea of civility. And I guess like my mind has changed a little bit. I mean, I'm already leaning towards like the fact that like probably my unease when the talk of incivility comes up probably comes from a place of privilege. And I think like through this conversation, I think that idea has just strengthened, and I'm coming more like I'm a larger supporter of like projects like yours now, where it's like, yeah, you know what, just fuck this unearned sense of authority or whatever. But I'm just curious, like, where are you guys at? Are you guys still have the same opinions, I guess?
It's funny. Something that Drew had said earlier did kind of shift my perspective a little bit about, like, you know, who deserves civility and respect. And I don't know, man. It's tough. Like, I don't necessarily think I'll change any of my tactics. You know, I think when dealing with individuals, like my point was always like approaching it from a civil starting block, at least, you know, if you're going to engage with someone and be like, you know, I don't think you're a bad person, but your like, ideas are harmful.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Maybe I've budged a small amount, but maybe not enough to make a real difference.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'll have to say is like, we talked about it a little bit, is like when you have to be disruptive, you know, when you have to go past civility, because civility isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's like why, like, you know, a lot of activists say like, you need to be disruptive, in order to enact social change, in order to like, you know, get people to start paying attention. And I truly connect with that now. You know, I think that, people have tried working with, you know, the two parties, and a lot of people are not content in our country, and things continue not to work. Incremental change continues not to work. And people want some serious radical change now. Both, like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a Proud Boy or a Black Lives Matter activist. Like, all these groups want radical change now, and they're very, very unhappy. So I think that's why, like, more and more, like, people are embracing this this narrative where you need to be disruptive to make a point, to make a political point, and to get people to start paying attention.
Like, I'm like, yes, incivility. And then you're like, yeah, the Proud Boys agree. I'm like, oh, fuck. Well, now it makes me take a little bit more pause in talking about it.
Next time we got to interview a Proud Boy that likes our show. The Proud Boys love our show. I'm telling you, like, from what bizarre. I've seen, like, because I mean, Barney's Barney, but she, you know, she like will tell these Proud Boys, follow us at Crackhead Barney, and like tell the Proud Boys to follow our account.
No way.
I'm like, I don't know, man. They might report her stuff. I don't know. I'm like the little anxious Jew about it. but then it turns out they're like, this is hilarious. You guys are so funny. You know, I don't agree with you guys and everything, but you guys are so funny. It's like, I don't know. It's something I think that you might not expect. That maybe our show is a little bit unifying in a weird way. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that they don't hate having a larger platform to share their message.
No, I mean, a lot of them actually feel heard.
Yeah, that's the problem.
I think that's another thing is, especially with performance art, everybody sees something different. Everybody, when someone looks at performance art and they're like, oh, this is performance art, they're just projecting whatever they're experiencing, whatever meaning they're construing from it, from like inside of them.
That's
so when a MAGA person watches our show or a QAnon shaman person watches our show, they're going to see something very different than right. like a leftist or a centrist.
I guess before we leave, is there anything more you want to say that you feel like you didn't get a chance to touch on? Maybe a question you're waiting for us to ask. You're like, why don't these fucking guys ask me this like really cool question I've been waiting for?
No. I think that's the final point is like, I didn't even realize it until the end of the podcast that it's like, oh, like is our show alienating more people or is it actually unifying people?
I think you had kind of said it earlier, like maybe it's alienating the right people and drawing the other right people to the cause. Like I said, like how do we engage the people that have totally like turned off and just been like, you know, it doesn't matter who wins. I lose either way.
I think it's just a messy thing. I think it's like the absurd reality we live in. Everybody's going to have a different reaction to it.
It's super fascinating. And I don't know if anyone who's still not familiar with Crackhead Barney, Drew, where can they find you and find all that jazz?
We're mostly on Instagram, but we're also on TikTok and YouTube at Crackhead Barney and Friends. And then TikTok, it's like the same handle, but because of the character limitations, there's no A and N. It just says Crackhead Barney ND Friends.
Friends.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, we'll put that in the description as well for anyone who's curious. Definitely check it out. It's an incredibly interesting, to say the least, page. And honestly, Drew, like, you know, you and I've worked together in other capacities before, but this is definitely one of your most intriguing projects I've seen, and like the success obviously speaks for itself.
Anyway, okay, all right, well, see you guys later.
All right, thanks so much, Drew. We'll touch base. Everyone go check out Crackhead Barney, and thanks so much, Drew. It's a pleasure speaking with you today.
Yeah, this was great.
All right, take care, man. Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode, and a special thanks to our guest Drew Rosenthal from Crackhead Barney and Friends. I know you want to hear more great content, so don't forget to join our Patreon and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Theme song written by my band Retrolux. Here at camp, we love supporting music and the people who make it. If you want to hear some amazing music, please check out all of our featured artists on our Spotify playlist.
We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we did. Don't forget to join us on Instagram, Twitter, and everywhere else. Stay tuned for Total Fucking Enlightenment Camp, where we get, that's right, totally fucking enlightened.
Take care. How did I do?
Great, like great.
On a scale of F to A+.
You know what's so funny is like, should we stop recording?
Yeah, let's stop recording.
I'll stop recording too. You know what's so funny is